Welcome to a special slice of GRD from Starfest. You know the wonderful convention that takes place every year at the Denver Tech Center in Denver, Colorado. I'd like to give a big heaping bowl of thanks to the Walkers for making sure another fantastic Starfest convention and for showing such a good time to all of your media people. Crazy big thanks going out to everybody from Janja and, of course, the wonderful Dave Minkus from ScreenGeeks.com. And thank you for snapping all those wonderful pictures, Ryan. We wouldn't have memories without you. So kick back and relax as we talk to a man of many talents, the one and only Mr. Ben Browder.
Hi, this is Billy Flynn from Geek Radio Daily, sitting here at Starfest with the wonderful, talented Mr. Ben Browder. Thank you so much for sitting down and talking to me today. I do appreciate it. You have been in a number of classic sci-fi shows, so I have to ask you, what was it like on the set of Melrose Place?
I was actually the only uncool guy ever to be on Melrose.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, because they were the episode that I was in, I was playing a boyfriend from back in Minnesota or Wisconsin or somewhere. And so Melrose Place was known for being kind of like, you know, hip, cutting edge, you know,
trendy.
Everybody had trendy, nice clothes on with nice hairstyles and everything. And because I was in Wisconsin, they brought out clothes from the 70s. It's like ill-fitting and, you know, like a bad hairstyle. And they made a point of showing how uncool the rest of America was compared to Melrose Place.
Wow, nice. A way to take
either
one
that
team.
Or I just naturally imbue that quality. I thought they hired me because I was cool, but I guess not.
Okay, and then randomly, going into Party of Five, did you have any idea Sam was racist going in? Did you? I mean, that came out of nowhere, right?
That's one of the things as an actor, yeah. It did. It came completely out of nowhere. I was actually pretty upset about it when it happened.
I can imagine.
Well, I'm kind of sensitive to these things, and I'm sensitive to the fact that he was a working class guy. And I was like, well, why are you making a working class guy a racist? You know, it just kind of, it bothered me. It rubbed me the wrong way, being, you know, from kind of working class stock.
Absolutely.
But as an actor on a series, I was talking to someone the other day who shall remain nameless, who was on a show, and we were having dinner, and he's talking about this character arc, and the producers were telling him they're so excited about what's going to happen to this character and this and that, and he's going, oh, this is great, and it's a really sexy show, and he's thinking, I'm going to be sleeping with a lot of women, and na-na-na-na-na. And they go, yeah, he's gay. So he's like going, wait, I'm gay? And he's already, you know, he's already filmed a fair portion of it, and he just found out he's gay. So you never really know.
Never know what's going to happen.
Never know.
One of the great lost tragedies, I happen to think, is Martian Law on UPN. Was that as fun as it looked like it was to make?
You saw Martian Law?
I did. Oh.
I've never seen it.
Really? You'd be surprised. It's fun and quirky. It really is.
Where did you see Martian Law?
I like to call it the Special Antenna.
The Special Antenna.
The Special Antenna.
I don't even think it's on IMDb.
Really? Wow, okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's listed on IMDb. You know what? It was basically the premise was, you know, sort of Firefly-ish before Firefly.
It certainly was.
And I originally had auditioned for the Marshal, not the Deputy.
Really? Okay.
And they had determined that I was too young. I was 36.
No, you're a baby.
Oh, you're too young. Yeah, I thought that show had possibly. That was actually my first science fiction, which no one knows about. I'm surprised
you
know.
There you go.
Surprised me.
What exactly kind of prep goes into playing Lee Majors?
You know, you watch a $6 Million Man.
Nice.
And
not,
then you
not
read
the
about
Fall Guy?
Lee.
Just the $6 Million
Man? Mostly the $6 Million Man, because nice. That's the period I was playing.
True.
You know, this was pre-Fallout.
Okay.
This was pre-Fallout with Farrah Fawcett. And then, the other part is, you know, you just kind of look at Trisha Helfer and go, I see what Lee was seeing.
Indeed.
You know, just like transposed.
Now, I know that's the generic question for a lot of people, but do you have any idea that Farscape was going to be as special as it was when you started, or was it just like another gig?
Every day, or not every day. But it seems like several times a year I find out how special Farscape was.
Okay.
And is. I got a letter today from a fan, and she was describing this process that she was going through of grieving while she was watching Farscape.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, we talk about TV shows, or we talk about science fiction, we tend to fixate on the, you know, the visuals, the explosions, the romance, and all, you know, or whatever it is. We talk about the show in a kind of third-person sort of way. And what I've discovered since doing Farscape is that people came to the show at a particular time in their lives, and it had a deep impact for them in many ways. To me, that's startling in some ways, but there's something about Farscape which is the stories and the characters and the things they went through are sometimes mirrors of the things that we're going through in life. And for people who get into that show, or into any show, but you know, for me personally, it's Farscape. It has a profound meaning for them, that shared story. So to me, I'm still surprised. I was surprised today when I read the letter.
Wow, that's wow.
Yeah.
And then Sci-Fi has to screw it up, playing it out of order, delaying it. Did anyone have any idea the axe was coming? I mean,
no. And Sci-Fi didn't know that the axe was coming either, because they that was literally a case of kind of bad timing between the parent company, which owned the Henson Company at the time,
right,
and Sci-Fi, and it was nobody wanted it to go away. It came down to numbers on a ledger.
Damn budget people.
That's the reality of it.
Was it at least fun to be able to parody on Stargate?
When we did the little short parody of Farscape, they had me cast as Crichton.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
And both Claudia and I were not comfortable with
wait a second
with parodying ourselves, right, you know, together on another show, and so she rightly pointed out that Vala would have cast Daniel Jackson as Crichton, and so I got to play Stark, and that was fun.
Well, recently you were on Arrow as Ted Gaynor, and I know comic books, they can bring anybody back to life. Any chance that we're going to be seeing more of it? It's such an integral...
I don't know. Someone that was talking to the producers up there was saying they're not sure if Ted's dead or not.
Exactly. Well, I've said that to people all day, like, well, he died, and I'm like, it's comic books, come on.
You know what? We never actually saw whether he was dead. They didn't check a pulse.
Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you.
Or at least I don't think they checked a pulse. No. Did they check a pulse? No.
They didn't
check a pulse. So, you know.
You had to assume. So, of course, big question, Doctor Who. Fan?
Yes.
Now, how incredible was that then?
Awesome.
Indeed.
And it's kind of a double awesome. We were shooting where Clint Eastwood shot the spaghetti westerns with Sergio Leone.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. So I'm getting to be a cowboy.
You start
Sergio
whistling
Leone,
the theme.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I go, oh, I know where I am. I'm, you know, just around there's the graveyard. You know, let's go for the close up. So that's cool. It's Doctor Who. I got to go inside the TARDIS.
Oh.
And what a great bunch of people to work with.
No doubt.
And it was, you know, I'd never been to Cardiff, Wales, so that was good.
So what's up next for you then?
I got an audition on Wednesday.
Outstanding. Rock
out. He's looking for work.
I feel you, man. Well, thank you so much. I do appreciate it. You have a fantastic rest of your time here at Starfest, man.
My pleasure.
And that was another small little slice of look back at the wonder and joy that was Starfest 2013. Again, thank you to all the hardworking crew at the media room. Thank you to all the hardworking folks from Janja. Thank you, John. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Lydia, for making everything run in the smoothest, most outstanding way humanly possible. It's the Denver Tech Center. It is Starfest, and we will see you there next year, May 2nd through the 4th, for Starfest 2014.